Healthcare reform is our topic right now during this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb, and our guest is Dave Chase. He is the author of The CEO's Guide to Restoring the American Dream, and he's also the co-founder of Health Rosetta, which promotes reform for the U.S. healthcare system. HealthRosetta.org for more information. Rosetta is spelled R-O-S-E-T-T-A. Now, Dave, I actually skipped over part of what your item says here. Health Rosetta promotes reform for the dysfunctional U.S. healthcare system. So let me just start. Is the U.S. healthcare system right now dysfunctional, in your opinion, and why?
Catastrophically so. It's responsible for taking away 20 years of wage gains for the working and middle class, you know, simultaneously producing, essentially a Pinto healthcare system at Cadillac prices.
That's memorable. A Pinto healthcare system at Cadillac prices. And now you have some people proposing Medicare for all. Or you have Bernie Sanders. I guess Bernie Sanders is the one of those proposing that. So also is Elizabeth Warren. What are your thoughts about that? It seems to me that that would just exacerbate the problem.
Well, you know, it's uniform across the board. There's three kind of fatal flaws to our system, and they're present in both our public and private flavors of a healthcare system. They're basically pricing failure, which is defined as no correlation between what you pay and the value you receive, administrative bloat, and overtreatment. And when you look at those three things, maybe they're a little better in one area on the, say, public plan side versus the private. I would say on overtreatment, our Medicare is worse than private. On pricing failure, our private is worse than our Medicare. And across the board, there's incredible administrative burden. I mean, the average doctor is spending 2 hours on administration for every 1 hour of patient time. And, I've yet to meet the doc who went to med school and delayed gratification, you know, probably longer than any other profession to be a glorified billing clerk. So, if we had a perfectly humming public health care system, I'd say, sure, you know, that'd be a good case to make for it. But let's fix what we have rather than doubling down on a flawed system. And, you know, we've seen that with the ACA
Obamacare.
Yeah, Obamacare. You know, it's kind of squeezed the metaphorical water balloon, you know, where you could say, sure, some people got coverage that didn't before and some people benefited. But meanwhile, at the same time, the explosion of what I call the functionally uninsured has, you know, we have millions and millions of people that their life savings are less than their deductible. And, you know, when you're basically a bad stub toe away from financial ruin, that's not a solution.
Yeah. It's funny you should mention the word bad toe stub, because a friend of mine had this, we had this private joke, you know, related to toe stubs. But I was telling him that I just heard this audiobook about Calvin Coolidge and his son in a day, you know, back in the 20s when he was in the White House. His son died ultimately from a staph infection, which he got from essentially a glorified toe stub. And that was in the 20s compared to, you know, what we have with medicine today to treat these things. So even a toe stub can be fatal, you know, in previous times.
Well, and not just previous times. I mean, the depending on which statistics you look at, preventable medical mistakes are either the third or fifth leading cause of death. Ooh. In this country. It's pretty horrific, and even worse, if you're a fan of the opioid crisis, you're a fan of our status quo health care system, because unlike other great public health crises like polio and HIV and so on, This is entirely a self-inflicted wound by our healthcare system. And even today, after all the awareness that we have, we still prescribe at five times the rate of most countries. And it's not like other countries have more pain than we do. And you know, the core thesis of my last book, The Opioid Crisis Wake-Up Call, was that the opioid crisis isn't an anomaly. It is our healthcare system. And you only have to look at benzos, which is the category of drugs for things like Xanax and Valium for, you know, anxiety and so on. It's pretty much tracking right where opioids were about a decade behind in terms of addiction, death. It already contributes to 30% of the opioid overdose deaths involve benzos as well. And remarkably, in the last decade, the overall rate of prescriptions has doubled in this country. And nobody's made the case that we're twice as sick as what we were a decade ago. Yet that's the reality of our status quo health plans that have given us the opioid crisis and now the benzos crisis.
So the U.S. healthcare system right now is dysfunctional then?
Oh, yeah. It's, you know, I have a chapter in my book, we've gone to war for less than what our healthcare system has done to America. I mean, it is just horrifically bad. You know, we're the undisputed world leaders in medical bill-driven bankruptcy. Our outcomes are, you know, pretty much at the bottom of the heap in terms of the developed world. You know, and as I mentioned earlier, you know, maybe I'm insulting Pintos when I say we have a Pinto healthcare system for at Cadillac prices. I mean, it's maybe a Yugo healthcare system at Cadillac prices.
Well, what, I mean, it sounds almost as if it's like a Frankenstein monster in the sense of, you know, a body part from this body and a, you know, another part from this and all put together and then sewn together and then given new life. Is that kind of what it is? In other words, because the you know, the Obamacare Act passed, that added to the problem, and then but you have these other things that have added to the problem, and put it all together, and this is what you end up with today.
Yeah, very much so. I mean, if you look at basically over the last century, just through a cascade of random, you know, medical breakthroughs, World War II, you know, Medicare, ACA, we just have kind of this growing hairball that of a healthcare system. And what you do, I sometimes draw the analogy of what's happened in the built environment. You know, if you look at what's happened there and the built environment, you know, our buildings, our schools, hospitals, you know, high rises, apartments, you name it, they have really transformed how they've been built, and they're far more efficient in terms of how they use energy and, you know, manage water. And what there's this organization called LEED that's certified buildings and accredited architects and so on that I use as an analogy. And what they didn't do is say, hey, let's just put recycle bins in polluting buildings and call them, you know, energy efficient or something like that. But that's kind of what we've done with our healthcare system, is done the equivalent of putting recycle bins and polluting inefficient buildings and say that's innovation. What they actually did, of course, was come up with a new blueprint, and that new model rose and got mainstreamed over a 10 to 20 year period. And that's fundamentally what our movement's doing is there's nobody I've met anywhere in the world, including outside the U.S., who says you would design the healthcare system like what we have it designed now. Of course you need a reset. And it's not like that's going to all happen overnight. It's happening at very much a grassroots level. We've seen it in every setting imaginable, in every corner of the country, rural, urban, private, public plans, large and small. It's still the exception to the rule. And so that's really the only challenge, is how do you replicate it? I mean, we say on our site, you know, healthcare's fixed, join us to replicate the fixes. And it's both a true and aspirational statement where all the solutions to fix healthcare have actually already been invented, proven, and modestly replicated. The challenge is, you know, there's, of course, 3.5 trillion reasons to protect the status quo. So there's a lot of people profiting from the dysfunction.
Oh.
If you look at the
lobbyists,
profits of hospitals and the profits of carriers and profits of the pharmacy supply chain, it's extraordinary.
Huh. Okay, we have 3.5 minutes to kind of wrap things up in this discussion. Let's talk about some of those solutions. And let me just say this. As a customer, I am a huge, huge fan of those little health saving accounts, like a debit card for your medical. Some money is deducted from my paycheck each, you know, each cycle, and it goes into that health savings plan, and it adds up. And then when I need to go to see the doctor and pay my copay or whatever extra billing, it comes right out of that card, but it's already covered. I love that. I wish there were more things like that. But talk about other solutions, too.
Yeah, I mean, the solutions that have really shown themselves to work, I would sum up the design of the health plan makes good decisions free or near free, like great primary care. And it makes bad decisions expensive or difficult to access, makes, you know, hey, if you go, you know, you've got cancer or you maybe need a transplant, guess what? You should probably go to the Mayo Clinic or one of these other centers of excellence. And so what you see with the employers who are literally spending 20, 40, even 50% less per capita on health benefits with some of the best outcomes around, that's what they do, is they say, you know what, that local community hospital, it may not be the place to get your, you know, kidney transplant. You should go to the Mayo Clinic. And we'll waive all the travel and we'll waive all the copays and deductible. And, you know, people understand that. And, you know, one of the things with, like what you're mentioning, is if you give people tools to be good consumers and make it really easy to be good consumers, they'll do that. And the primary care one is really tends to be overlooked. And is, you know, the reality is there's no well-functioning healthcare system anywhere in the world not built on proper primary care. And nothing created more fertile ground for the opioid crisis than our devastated primary care. So that's where you see some of the case studies I have in my book where they've tackled opioids upstream, you know, stop addiction before it starts, and then also downstream, how do you address it after people are addicted? Primary care is at the heart of that.
Okay, define, what do you mean by primary care? What does that mean, and how does that relate to this topic?
Yeah, I mean, what unfortunately has become the reality for most primary care encounters today is it's kind of milk in the back of the store. You know, the primary care docs got gobbled up by the healthcare system, and they can refer to $5 to $10 million of value. So you have these drive-by appointments that are nothing like what you experienced 20 years ago, where, you know, is truly primary, where in a proper primary care, they can fully address 90% of the issues people come into the healthcare system for. So let's use one quick example most people can relate to: lower back pain. Number one, second most common reason people go to the doctor after cold and flu, number one driver of disability, and guess what? The number one driver of opioid prescriptions, even though there's zero evidence that it's the most effective treatment. So when you have proper primary care, you have the time to understand what's going on, and you have a PT in the clinic that can address the vast majority of those issues. And that's what you see with the employers who are, you know, don't have an opioid problem because they have this type of thing. And that's just one of many examples where if you actually allow some time and not force these 7-minute appointments on the poor primary care docs, you can solve problems quite readily.
Huh. Okay, and I assume that if people go on to healthrosetta.org, they can get more information on the solutions as well as, you know, more analysis of the problem. Thank you so much for being with us, Dave. Any closing thought in 10 seconds?
They can also download the free book for even more information on that site. So thanks again for the opportunity.
Okay, thank you now. Bye-bye.